Shout Out is a registered charity and we work all across Ireland delivering workshops to young people. We deliver workshops in schools, to teachers, to parents and guardians, youth workers and even workplaces, because eventually you'll end up working there too, and we want those to be inclusive spaces for you.
For 10 years now, since 2012, we've been delivering workshops in secondary schools across the island of Ireland to tackle LGBTQ+ bullying. And we've done over 2,000 student workshops over the past 8 school years, speaking directly to over 60,000 students.
In Shout Out, we use our on-the-ground experience of speaking with young people to inform all of our training modules, which we also deliver to teachers, parents, guardians, social workers, youth workers, and in workplaces.
If you believe in inclusion through education and you want to learn more, book a workshop for your school or for staff, and you can learn more at www.shoutout.ie.
Hi, you're listening to Shout Out, Listen In.
Shout Out, Listen In.
Shout Out, Listen In.
Tátú geistochla, Shout Out, Listen In.
Shout Out, Listen In.
In both our workshops and on this podcast, members of the LGBTQ+ community share their own personal stories, which can lead to open conversations about both the positive and the negative experiences of being LGBTQ+. We are aware that these stories can be triggering for people at times, so please be gentle and cautious when listening, and always reach out for help if you feel you need it.
Hello, and you're so welcome to another episode of Shout Out, Listen In with me, Lisa Nicombrough, from the steering committee of Shout Out. I'm delighted to have you back with us for another great year, I hope, of Shout Out, Listen In podcasts, where we look at all things awareness and education of LGBT issues right across the community in lots of different areas. You can listen back to all of our podcasts to date, over a year of them now, on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And please do give us a follow, a rating, whatever you can do, or share the podcast with friends who may be interested or colleagues to help us boost the podcast. Thanks for tuning in today to this first episode of 2024. For which I'm delighted to say we have a really special guest, someone I've wanted to chat to on this podcast for a while, and that is Oisín O'Reilly, who is CEO of Outhouse LGBTQ+ Centre. I popped into Oisín in Outhouse to have a chat about himself and his role as CEO, the centre, all they've achieved in 2023 and all they plan to in the years ahead as part of their strategic plan. We spoke about advocacy, homelessness, lots of issues facing the community. So please do be warned that listening to this podcast, there may be some issues that may arise that may be upsetting for some of you. And some of those include attacks and violence on LGBTQ+ people. But overall, we had a really positive and interesting conversation, and there's lots to learn about all the work that Outhouse is doing for our community. So here it is, my recent chat with Oisín O'Reilly. So I'm delighted to be here in Outhouse LGBTQ+ Centre with Oisín O'Reilly, pronouns he, him, who is CEO of the centre with over 20 years experience in social justice campaigns, fundraising and non-profit leadership. He served on boards for organisations such as International LGBTQ+ Youth and Student Organisation, Dublin Pride and the Irish Refugee Council. Oisín is a dedicated advocate for LGBTQ+ equity and human rights in Ireland. And from just seeing you around the place, Oisín, meeting people, social media and the rest of it, I can absolutely attest to all the things that are in this bio, because I really think you are one of those people who really stands out within the LGBTQ+ community, who stands for social justice and equity and things like that. So yeah, you've had an interesting career to date by the sounds of it.
Yeah, totally. It's many trapdoors and interesting conversations or cups of tea that have led me down paths.
Exactly. You know? Same for me. Yeah. Same for many of us. Would you tell us a little bit about yourself, other than what I've mentioned there? Anything you'd like to share? A bit about your own role here with the centre and your work to date since taking on the role of CEO in Outhouse?
Yeah, well, I suppose I live with my partner, Pob, in the North Inner City, just off Dorset Street, and our cat, Wiggles.
And, handy for Outhouse on Capel Street.
Very handy, 10-minute walk into work in the mornings, which is nice, so it is. And yeah, I took over here April 2 years ago, so coming up on 2 years this coming April. So, and I've been with Belong To for 15 years before that. hat as deputy CEO and head of operations and fundraising. So I had always said to Meninia over there, who's still my work wife to this day, it was like, if that job ever comes up at Outhouse, take that as my notice. And because I have a massive growl for Outhouse and what it stands for, and it's the first queer space that I ever came into as a queer person, and I have a lot of memories of the street outside and pacing it, and then finally coming through the threshold and meeting the team here. And I'd always want to be part of the story, and also I could see a potential that was yet to be unleashed in it. It was kind of like bursting at the seams to come out, and I'm just delighted that I got to come and play and unlock it.
Absolutely. And so, speaking of belong to, I was only listening to the newest, I think, LGBTQ radio show on the scene, Dill Show on FM 104.
Oh, last week, yeah.
Absolutely. And Moninia and some other people were speaking about that transition from service user to service provider. And so you can see that transition. I think a lot of us in the community can see the transition from, I came to this charity or this centre or this space, and I remember the feeling, well, it wasn't that long ago, and now I'm suddenly working there, I'm working for that charity, or I'm involved.
Totally. Like, I'm a total belong to baby. Like, you know, I belong to you, or, you know, was based here in Outhouse in its early days, and had its offices here, and the youth groups used to meet here. And that's why I came here first. I was a teenager who was lost and very fearful of being rejected by my family and friends and otherwise, and found a community of love and support. And then I went on to volunteer with Belong To, and then to sit on its board for a few years, and then to join its staff team. So, like, I suppose my entire professional career has been inside the LGBT movement and sector. Like, I'm really lucky that I get to do the work that I get to do and have the impact that I and my teams have. You know, like, it's a lot of fun. It's also a lot of hard work, you know, but I really enjoy it. Yeah,
and I think a lot of us would see a job at Outhouse for people in the community or people working for organizations in the community as, you know, it feels like, it's interesting, you know, with the new language used as the center, it really feels like the center of the community in Ireland, and it really feels like such an important alcohol free space and a number of other things, daytime space that we probably need very much and have needed for a long time to be there and to continue to develop, as you say, and grow. And
I think who Outhouse is and the role it plays has flexed and adapted and shifted over time, you know, and like, I very much see us as the spiritual successor to the Hirschfeld Centre, and like the legacy that comes from history, you know, from that. And like, you know, we talk about we've spent a lot of time since the riots in Dublin at the end of November talking about the notion of safe space and safety in our community. And I think we all have in many different ways, and how we feel safe or don't feel safe, or what helps us feel safe. And, you know, I kind of feel like that was language that, when I look back through the records and the presses here in this room, very much of the mid-90s, when Outhouse was being set up in its current guise, and kind of going, you know, that cyclical nature of things in some ways, and coming around to, well, is the safe space that was needed then congruent now? Or what does it look like, and how does it look different? And but also, what are the wants as well? Yeah. And the hopes, the aspirations, the dreams? Like, I never want to lose sight of joy, you know, like, the work sometimes in advocacy, in fighting and helping people facing homelessness, or, you know, having been the victim of a homophobic crime or otherwise, they're very serious things, you know, but holding space to be able to laugh about the pain at times, and to find joy in events and entertainment, you know, as we're recording this tonight, like, the book club is reopening tonight downstairs. You know, there's 40 people coming in for a joyous occasion to share connection, make friends, share a passion and a joy together. There's massive power in that.
And there's like the supports that one gets from a support group, or, you know, the homelessness services, the different services you provide. Sometimes that support comes in the form of a yoga class or a book club or a night of film or whatever. All of the different events that you put on, they're equally important, I think.
Very much so, you know, and like, people often say to us, and we've just finished a round of consultation in the community, kind of to inform plans for this year. And, you know, like, still the two biggest barriers to people coming here is a lack of confidence and not knowing someone here. So we're about to be setting up kind of a buddy system where people come who want to come to Outhouse and maybe don't know someone or are a bit nervous can meet a member the team and get shown around and introduced and otherwise to really help break that down, because I've experienced the joy of coming into a space like this, making friends, finding the love that the community brings, and I'm really anxious and eager to share that with many, many more people who have yet to find it or experience it.
Yeah, and as you say, I remember my first experience was coming in here as a quiet bisexual not so long ago, when I discovered my sexuality later in life, and I just said, I'm going to nip in here quietly on culture night, and there was the most, as you say, joyous, glorious drag and sort of mix of spoken word and different things going on in here. And I remember just sitting quietly and enjoying it and lapping that up. So I think Outhouse has always done it but continues to do it and grow, and it's so important. What we're trying to do with this podcast, Shout Out Listen In, is to talk about education and awareness of LGBTQ issues, which is fairly broad, but I suppose when it comes to those big words, education, awareness, and advocacy that you mentioned, what do you see as Outhouse's role when it comes to those things and kind of the broader issues facing our community?
Yeah, like they're vital, you know, and like we thought a lot about this in our strategic planning, you know, going back a year ago to think about where can we add a unique voice that isn't going to duplicate efforts that other activists or organisations already have underway. And, you know, kind of looking at that, and also looking a bit to our history and maybe where our strengths lie, you know, and kind of, you know, and Outhouse is a regional organization, like we kind of cover the greater Dublin area. Yeah. So we also have to be mindful about maybe the scale of impact that we can have with that kind of focus. And really, we, you know, we've identified that there are four key themes that we will lead out on within the movement. Mm. The first is the safety of our community. And, you know, we talk about safe space, but, you know, I want to be really clear for us. I'm never conceding that the public realm should be safe for queer people. Mm-hmm. And I think in the context of violence, you know, the community has faced, like I'm thinking back to my first week here at Outhouse, tragically my first day and week were the murders of Michael Snee and Amy Moffat. Sure. We then had 16 weekends of violent assault against members of the community here in the city of Dublin through that summer. You know, we have witnessed the right continue to grow. We have seen them embolden and spark division and a riot in our city. So, you know, this is a very hot issue for us. And I see our role is in educating allies and partners about the impact on our community, in educating our public and civic leaders, in engaging with Garda Síochána and the policing authority and others, so that, you know, the impact that this has in terms of our sense of safety, our sense of being able to live open, free, expressive lives in every part of our society is impacted by this. You know, so that's one that we've spent quite a lot working on over the last few months, and we've secured a commitment from government to host a summit with civil society to discuss a more holistic approach to addressing the conditions in our society that are creating a space in which the far right can organise and act, you know, and prey on vulnerable communities that have been left behind. So we're hopeful that that's going to happen with a range of NGO partners towards the end of February, and that there'll be announcements coming from NGOs and government about how we're going to work better together, and also what new investments government are going to make in social infrastructure, in community development, in education and training, in employment, in social care, in our health system, in housing. All of these things are interlinked and vitally important. The other area where we've spent quite a bit of time, again, is homelessness. Like LGBTQ plus people are disproportionately affected by housing instability and homelessness. Mm-hmm. We have a housing crisis in this country. You know, queer homeless people are disproportionately represented in the homeless statistics. So over the last year, we've been working behind the scenes with other LGBT organisations, with the HSE, the Dublin Regional Homeless Executive, and with the homeless sector itself, to design emergency accommodation and a fit for purpose shelter and service specifically for the needs of LGBTQ plus homeless people. And we're at an advanced stage of service design in that. Wow. We've a public consultation underway, and and I'd written about it in GCN over the Christmas, and we have a survey that we're launching in partnership with GCN in the weeks ahead, to again, we need to sense check the plans that we have are fit for purpose for those who've lived that experience. You know, we've looked at the research, we've looked at models internationally, we've pulled what we feel is the best of all of it together, and now we need to sense check, are we on the right track from those who have lived that, and then help refine the plans and then bring it forward. You know, so I'm hopeful and optimistic that we will see an emergency shelter for LGBTQ plus people probably in the next year or two opening. That's my hope. But it is one component of a fix. There are big questions we need to answer about emergency accommodation is designed to be a short gap. What do we do about transitional housing? How do people move back towards, you know, kind of more stable forms of housing beyond supported or assisted living environments and otherwise? And we don't have those answers yet because the entire system is backed up. So that could be the next phase of work that we need to look into about how do we help people, you know, with that housing issue. And so they're kind of two key areas. The other that we're going to hopefully start work on later this year is around poverty. Again, the international literature would say that queer people are disproportionately affected by poverty. We have no information on poverty affecting LGBTQ plus people in Ireland. And, you know, looking at commissioning a small research study to start to unearth what's going on there, to find some of the experience here so that we can, again, have public policy that meets the needs of our community, that our LGBT organisations and service providers have the knowledge and intelligence about what's going on so that we can design effective supports and interventions and responses to that, are very, very critical. And lastly, it's climate change. Like, it's an existential threat that's going to face absolutely every one of us. And every, you know, looking at, I love history, and, you know, looking back at history, every major disruption in the world, those who live on the margins are the first to be affected. Mm-hmm. They are affected most deeply and profoundly by the change in that society, and often are the last ones to benefit from like an upswing or an improvement. So queer people are marginalized. You know, I don't like that we are, but we are. So when climate change hits, are we going to be, you know, bearing the brunt of climate change? You know, so we've joined Coalition 2030, which is a grouping of civil society organisations, and we're working with them around the implementation of the Sustainable Development Goals here in Ireland to make sure that there is a queer lens on the just transition and what that looks like and how it affects queer people, and that none of us are left behind in the policy choices that are being made for us, either here in Dublin or in Brussels or at the UN in New York.
I think a lot of people will be really comforted to hear. I certainly am. And I think there were bits there that I didn't know about, and a lot of people won't have known about. And I think sometimes when we see these awful attacks, like you talk about that summer that you started here, you talk about two gay men being murdered in the 2020s, you know, really sometimes people can feel really lost and desperate and perhaps thinking that nothing is being done or nothing will change or things can't change. But it's wonderful to hear of that advocacy, that strong, you know, those efforts being made, working with government and with other CSOs and things like that to really, you know, tackle these issues and make changes. So it's wonderful. And the emergency housing accommodation is incredible. And I know so many people in you know, the community who've experienced homelessness, which, you know, as somebody who's fairly perhaps lower to whatever middle class, that wouldn't be the case, I think, if I was straight. So most of the people I know who have been homeless or had experiences of it are LGBT people. So it does clearly, as you say, it's disproportionate, and the ones on the margins are often the ones to be impacted by these issues. Looking back at 2023, and you had some fabulous graphics, I'd encourage people to have a look back on your social media, in particular on LinkedIn. I spotted, you know, some of these figures, like 27 years in operation, quite a while, 30 right around the corner. Over 600 people supported specifically through services, but 40,000 through the doors in 2023 as visitors in all different ways. And sometimes I'm sure people can come in and have a quiet cup of coffee and perhaps not tell anybody that they're LGBTQ. And of course, your ambitious strategic plan that you mentioned and that was launched. Are you happy with all you've achieved? You should be. But I wonder how you reflect on it yourself.
Yeah, like last year was a whirlwind, you know, and the impact the team have had on the community has been nothing short of astounding. And I'm so privileged to have such an amazing team here at the centre, you know, not only that, you know, kind of the stats that we put out, we're bringing forward part of the strategy. So we have a new social care team that we're recruiting at the moment, and will be in place kind of in a couple of months' time, that will enable us to better support those 600 individuals who really needed, you know, kind of more help, and in particular, you know, kind of the people who come to us in crisis. And last year there were 48 people. It's almost one a week, you know, kind of coming in where there is a very critical risk for that individual, and they need quite an awful lot of help and support. So being able to give them, you know, the love, the care, the compassion, the empathy, the support, the backup they need. I can't wait to get that in place, because it's something that's really been missing from the landscape. So it has. And, you know, we're going to scale the various social groups that we have. We have recruitment underway for a new kind of families, Rainbow Families group for LGBT people who are parents, to create a social space for the families to come together here at the centre that we're going to kick off next month. There's recruitment getting underway for facilitators, volunteer facilitators for Tea Time, which is our trans and non-binary social group that meets every week here at the centre. We have a new social group for ACE and aromantic people that we're going to start recruitment on around Valentine's Day, in other words. So, you know, we are motoring forward, as well as a whole host of peer support groups, you know, that we're going to roll out over the course of the year. So, like, 2023 was kind of the start, you know, and we're kind of in this you know, consolidation or adapting phase in our strategy before we really start to accelerate, even though we're bringing in these new things. So, you know, we're looking at launching a rocket, you know, over the next 5 years, that's going to bring the centre and what we offer and what we do and what's available to our community to a whole new level. You know, that's the dream, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, the point of a strategic plan is to look ahead, you know, in the medium term, not just next year, not just tomorrow, but not too far off in advance either, those 3-4 years ahead. What does 2024 look like to you, or what are maybe even highlights that you see will be as standouts to the community or to yourselves?
Yeah, I think the kind of the setting up of that one-to-one service is going to be huge. The expansion of those groups that I talked about is going to be massive. There's an awful lot of, like, hidden work we're going to be doing as well inside our organization, and we call it our capability goal, of kind of getting ourselves ready to take that next, you know, jump or leap in our strategy. And something that's going to be about systems and processes that are very, very boring, and no one really sees, but when they don't work, everyone sees that they don't work. So there's a lot of that kind of plumbing work that we need to do to get ready. You know, some of the other pieces, we've made some investments in the building over the last year. We're hopeful that we're going to give quite a large part of the building a big facelift towards the end of the year. So, you know, and we will be a partial construction site, I think, for, you know, the next 2 or 3 years as we grapple with restoring one of the oldest Georgians in the city of Dublin, and, you know, making it more accessible and working towards universal accessibility in the years ahead, you know.
Yeah. So on that, how important is intersectionality, you know, as part of the strategic plan, as part of what you're doing? You've mentioned so many different groups within the community. I always think of, you know, communities within communities and communities within those again, LGBT families, trans people, non-binary people. There's so many, and there's so many cross sections and things. How central is that to your work?
It is. So we talk about, there are 5 goals in the strategy and there are 5 values. But there are 2 foundations, and the 2 foundations are intersectionality and equity. They are the first guiding lights to everything we do. You know, our community has evolved and changed radically, and, you know, Outhouse has a challenge in keeping up with the pace of change. I think every community organisation and every activist does. You know, the visibility that trans and non-binary people have today in our community is wonderful, but a decade ago, it was nowhere near this level of visibility. Do you know, so I'm conscious of who are the next grouping or community within community, you know, that are going to be more visible in a decade's time. And how are we preparing to create space, to open up, to uplift voices, you know, and to prioritize the, you know, the limited resources that we have as an organization into those spaces where there hasn't been investment before, you know, and that's the challenge for us, you know, that we we stick with the times and we keep relevant, you know. So I don't think we can do, you know, I don't think we can move forward wholeheartedly and live up to the ideals that our community has of us and our expectations if we don't have intersectionality and equity front and center, you know. And some of this, we're not going to get it right, and it's always going to be a work in progress, and I think that's one of the challenges, you know. But it's also one of the things that's quite exciting, because we get to reinvent continuously and try things out and find what works best in a particular moment of time, of context, of people, of culture, of law, of society, and then when it isn't serving us any longer, to jettison it and move forward and find the next best thing.
Absolutely. If anyone's listening and they're thinking of popping in, but maybe they don't want to just come in blind or quiet, I love that idea of what you said, the buddy system earlier. But are there any, I think sometimes an event or an occasion can provide that opportunity as well to just pop in. Any standout events? And I know this will be hard, and anyone who's listening who has events in Outhouse, we couldn't possibly name them all in the podcast. And I know that you share them weekly now on your Instagram, which is so cool to see day to day what's happening. If somebody's free on a Monday, they can see what's happening on a Monday. Totally. So there's a real range of events and things that
there is, this kind of sounds cliched, but there really is something for everyone under the roof, you know.
I agree.
But like, for anyone who's looking for their event, go to www.outhouse.ie/events and you'll find the full events listing. It updates in real time, it's mobile friendly, you know, you can register for events online and everything else. If you want an event to exist at the centre and it doesn't yet, we would love to hear from you. We can't come up with all the ideas, and many of our events are delivered in partnership or with volunteers or otherwise. Reach out to us, lift the phone, send us an email. We'll have a chat, see what we can make happen. I'm really excited about LGBT History Month. I'm a bit of a history nerd, and I absolutely love it. So we have an exciting range of history talks every Tuesday night through the month of February here at the centre. And we have some of the leading activists who to come and talk about their own work and their experience of our queer history here in Ireland. We have Harm Tiernan from GCN. We have Onda Bardoon from LGBT Pavi is going to talk about the history of LGBT travellers and Roma people here in Ireland. I'm trying to think who I'm going to leave people out. We've said Phillips.
There's a range.
He's going to talk about trans history in an Irish context and otherwise, and there's many others. So like, there's going to be something really exciting for people to dip into. And it's also one of those events like you, but calling in, if it's your first time, come in, enjoy the event, you know, have a cuppa downstairs. I'm also really excited that we have a run of 42 shows in the International Dublin Gay Theatre Festival in the first 2 weeks of May this year. I don't have the titles of the shows yet, but they'll be coming out. And so, you know, we are a venue for many other things that happen inside our community as well. So there really is a little bit of something for everyone.
And I've done yoga classes here, which I thought were really inclusive, and for people who maybe weren't as comfortable in their bodies to go into, you know, other yoga spaces, I thought that was really beautiful as well. So I really encourage, as you said, Oisin, log on and find your event, and if it's not there, create it and bring the idea. So fascinating. What are your own personal hopes for the years ahead and for your role? You know, as you say, you're only 2 years in the door, which can be a short time for a CEO. What do you want from the future of Outhouse, other than things that you've mentioned already?
Yeah, I think for me, the question of accessibility to the centre is a huge one. Today, I've just written our submission to the National Disability Strategy, and to talk about how, you know, there is no queer space anywhere in Ireland that is universally accessible. So there are many LGBTQ plus people who have a physical disability who cannot access their community in any way, shape or form. And that makes me really, really sad, you know. And I know from the consultations we've undertaken that we're talking about just over 1 in 10 members of our community can't access a safe space, physical environment where they have that, I'm in a queer space. And this is queer, fully queer, you know. So that to me is, you know, the challenge that I want to solve. It's not a quick fix. It may be another 10 years away. I'm very open and honest about that. But, you know, we're having accessibility audits done here at 105 Capel Street. We're planning to carry out a feasibility study on the future location of the centre, whether that'll stay here at 105 or whether we'll look at moving premises, and what's the cost benefit analysis of adapting this building versus taking over a more modern building and then adapting it to our needs, or otherwise, you know, there's all of those things that have to be weighed up, and that takes time, and we need experts in architecture and accessibility. We need to talk with our funders and the state, you know, like, none of those projects come cheap. And figure out, how do we achieve that? Like, that's the thing I want to, when I retire or leave the role here, is that at least I have left a plan in place as to how that will be achieved, even if I haven't gotten to deliver it yet, you know. But there are so many people who, you know, and I look back to, it was only last week, I was going through some of the historical records here about the meetings that were happening in the Ormond Hotel about founding out house and accessibility being talked about in 95. And we're now in 2024 and we're still talking about it. So there's a, you know, and many people have looked at this conundrum in different ways. but I really want us to have an answer to this, because for an organisation that's, you know, placing intersectionality and equity at its foundation, and I've done that, you know, we've got to put our money where our mouth is and our effort where our mouth is, you know, and I'm committed to doing that, and I hope I can find the solution.
Absolutely. Well, the commitment is crystal clear, I think, from the outside, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who will be anxiously waiting for that. As you say, 1 in 10 in our community, the stats are huge, so I'm sure that work will get over the line, and it may take time, but it'll be worth it. Well, Sheena, it was such a pleasure to sit down and chat to you and to welcome you on to Shout Out Listen In. You're someone we wanted to have on the show to speak about the centre and to speak about all of the great work that you do, and indeed the work you've done and belong to, and so many other organisations. Thanks so much for taking the time to sit with us, and we wish you all the best for 2024 and everything to come for Outhouse LGBTQ Plus Centre.
Thanks so much, Lisa. Really appreciate it.
You've just listened to a chat I had with Oisin O'Reilly, CEO of Outhouse LGBTQ Plus Centre, in his gorgeous office at the top of the centre. And it was such a pleasure to sit down and learn about all of the amazing work that Outhouse is doing and will continue to do, I have no doubt, in the years and decades ahead. Thanks so much to Oisin and his colleagues for having us in to record this episode of Shout Out Listen In, and thanks to all of you for tuning in, and thanks also to our wonderful producer Ferg Curtis. If you want to learn more about Ferg and his great work, you can listen back to the November episode of Shout Out Listen In, where we sat down with Ferg for a chat about all of his work in podcasting and the arts. Don't forget to get in touch with us, in particular now as we look ahead to a new year of Shout Out Listen In podcasts. We'd love to hear your ideas for the series or things you'd like to have covered. Drop us an email to team@shoutout.ie or get in touch with us on social media @shoutout_IRE. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Shout Out Listen In. And we hope that you will continue to join us on this new venture by tuning in to our upcoming episodes. Massive thank you to Elaine May for her uplifting music contribution, Tall Tales Podcasts for their support in producing this podcast, and a huge thank you to all the Shoutout volunteers, guests and contributors who helped bring this podcast to all major podcast platforms and who continue to inspire and educate in schools across the country. If you would like to request a workshop, donate, become a volunteer, or find out more information about Shoutout, head over to shoutout.ie. We would be so grateful if you could take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. It will help us bring you more episodes of Shout Out Listen In.